I'm speaking with John Newton about his book, The Oldest Foods on Earth. And when we call them the oldest foods, how far back are we going, John?
Gondwana land.
Gondwana.
Yeah, at least. Yeah. Now, there's one in the book, The Native Pepper, which definitely dates from Gondwana. And there's probably many more, but I tracked that one down. The leaf has 30 different compounds in it. It had to last from Gondwana through Antarctic, through desert, all the way today. It's a remarkable plant, and there's a lot of them in Australia. There's purportedly up to 6,000 native food plants. Food, fibre and medicine, of course, they have multiple uses.
Why has it taken us so long to realise what an incredible treasure trove of botanical specimens we have here right in our own country?
The people who arrived in this country first, the non-Indigenous people, the colonists, the invaders, whatever you want to call them, they brought their own food with them. They bought their own livestock. They bought their own fruit and veg. They bought everything they thought they'd need because they'd been told by Cook and Banks, who should have known better, that there wasn't much to eat and drink here. So they brought it all with them. And they also bought a system of agriculture which dispossessed the people who were here from their land and their food. And then we stuck to the Anglo-Celtic diet from that period until about 1945 without deviating. Why did we do that? Because people do stick to their diets. There's a couple of things. There's some neophobia, frightened of the new. But there was also an element of what I term in the book and others term food racism. Because the foods were associated with those we thought of as the wandering savages, we didn't want to have anything to do with their food.
So in doing the research for this book, where did you think to start? To go back just to the first settlement and look there, or to go back a lot further and try and actually examine from Aboriginal records what you thought they might have been eating?
Well, there aren't many Aboriginal records, of course, because, interestingly, they didn't have a written culture. But there are anthropologists who were here early enough. A guy called Richard A. Gould, who was in the Eastern Desert early enough, so he could embed himself with a group of Wotspiri people, and he could watch the way that they gathered food, the way they killed food, and the way they ate. So that those sorts of people were very useful. And books by people like Margaret Mary Turner, who wrote a book, a list of Aranda Orenti foods, and those sorts of anthropologists and Indigenous people who wrote about it. But we weren't here. There was no one here. There was no written record before 1788. And I've called this reading A Modest Proposal for January 26. At the head of the last chapter in the book, I quote Bruce Pascoe from his book, Dark Emu. Having said sorry, we refuse to say thanks. And there is the germ of an idea. But first, let's take a quick look at the way first contacts with Indigenous people happened in America and in Australia. On the last Thursday of November each year, Americans of all ethnic backgrounds, colours and religions gather in their family homes to eat a ritual meal, comprising a mix of Native American, European and latterly ingredients from their own food cultures. This is a feast whose roots can be found in an expression of joy at bringing in the first harvest in a new land, but which transformed into a celebration of the idea of America. The first of these meals took place in 1621 in the company of Native Americans. At the centre of this national feast was and is the turkey. In her chapter, The Invention of Thanksgiving, a Ritual of American Nationality, Janet Siskind says that more than just a part of the wilderness that had been civilised, the Thanksgiving turkey powerfully symbolises the Indians. Other native foods at the table were, and still are, pumpkins and cranberries, and recipes for which appeared in the first American cookbook, published in 1796, and barberries. By contrast, at the first meal shared between the colonisers of Australia and an Indigenous inhabitant, Arapanu, that man was kidnapped. He was captured at Manly Cove, where, according to Watkin Tench, several Indigenous men were seen standing on the beach. They were enticed by courteous behaviour and a few presents to enter into conversation. Once the group approached, our soldiers rushed in amongst them and seized two men. But only one, Arapanu, was secured. He was fastened by ropes to the boat, where he set up the most piercing and lamentable cries of distress. After being offered some fish, he sullenly submitted to his destiny, which was to be taken by force to the governor's residence. The captured man was taken to a side table at the governor's residence, not the main table, and according to Tench, ate heartily of fish and ducks which he first cooled. He smelled at the bread and salt meat, but wouldn't eat it, and would drink nothing but water, disdaining the liquors offered him. The contrast could not be greater, both on and around the tables. Now, back to my idea. In writing this book, I came across one author, Lak Lak Buddhawanga, who also credits her family, and whose book Welcome to My Country, although sold as a children's book, is a book for all ages. In it, she tells the story of the life she and her family live in northeast Arnhem Land. Lak Lak is of the Yolngu people. At the end of the book, she writes, "When my grandmothers collected food, they saved it in a basket and shared it. Now, we are putting our knowledge in a basket and we share it, mother to grandchildren, and now you have to share it with your family." I'm attempting with this book to share the food that non-Indigenous Australians have turned their backs on for so many years. And here at the end, I would like to make a proposal. Australia Day on 26th of January celebrates the day Captain Phillip raised the English flag at Sydney Cove. It continues a contentious day. Some even call it Invasion Day. I would like to suggest that we celebrate the day in our cities and towns with a meal of native Australian foods shared between Europeans and Aboriginal Australians. To take up Pascoe's suggestion, the meal will be giving thanks to the Indigenous inhabitants for caring for the country and, admittedly belatedly, showing us the foods of the land. How this will be achieved and who will organise it would need to be carefully worked out. The obvious organisers would be the various Australia Day committees in conjunction with a group called ANFL, who are the peak body of native food producers. But this would, I believe, entirely change the meaning of Australia Day. We might even change the name. How about Together Day? But one thing at a time. First, sharing a meal. It's never too late. As I wrote in the introduction, non-Indigenous Australians must accept that the original inhabitants have carefully stewarded this land for the entire time they have lived here and have the oldest unbroken culture in the world before racism, culinary and otherwise, will disappear. At the end of The Biggest Estate on Earth, Bill Gammage writes, "We have a continent to learn. If we are to survive, let alone feel at home, we must begin to understand our country. If we succeed, one day we might become Australian." One way of achieving this may well be to sit down as brothers and sisters and share a meal.
It's a delightful idea. Should we all be eating wallaby stew then?
Among other things, we don't have to change our diets entirely. The Americans eat turkey, they eat cranberries, they eat barberries, but they also eat steak and they eat, you know, carrots and everything else. So all we're doing is incorporating the food into our food, which could end up being called a truly Australian cuisine. How we can have an Australian cuisine without Australian ingredients, I don't know.
Well, you know, there's been quite a revolution amongst chefs into introducing native foods.
Yes,
it's been quite popular.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think that that's getting it much more into the mainstream idea that people can eat things. I mean, Davidson plum and wattle seed and all these things are now very much taken for granted, aren't they?
Well, not by a lot. There are 50 restaurants in Australia who are at the forefront of using native foods. But they're not just exclusively using native foods. They're incorporating these foods into their cuisine. The most interesting example, I think, is Kylie Kwong. Now, Kylie Kwong cooks food from her background. She's a Cantonese Chinese, and she cooks traditional with a twist. She has leapt on these things because she thinks they work, she believes they work, I've been there, they do, very well in harmony and in combination with Chinese ingredients.
Somehow that's extremely apt, given that the Chinese came here almost hot on the heels of the English anyway into the country.
Yes,
definitely,
sure.
And they introduced Chinese cuisine very, very early into this country.
And so there was no country town without a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.